Welcome to Season 3 of The Locked Room. Stories from the golden age of mystery and crime fiction. I'm Wydell, and our first story this season is A Considerable Murder by Barry Payne. Mr. Albert Truesworth Mackinder, having made much money in the city of London, retired to a house by the sea at Helmston. He was at this time a widower of 58, and he was accompanied by his only daughter, Elsa, a pretty child of 16. Mr. Mackinder was satisfactory to the local society, and was not displeased with it himself. But he had had many ideas in his life. And the idea which possessed him most strongly at present was that he was interested in the onward march of science. For this reason, he interested himself deeply in Dr. Bruce Perthwell. Dr. Perthwell attended Miss Mackinder once, and Mr. Mackinder twice, on all three occasions for colds. When Dr. Perthwell recommended that they should stay in bed, feed light, and take the medicine which he would send up to the house, results had been satisfactory on each occasion, but this did not impress Mr. Mackinder nearly so much as the way in which Dr. Perthwell spoke of the mysteries and magic of science. Dr. Perthwell was a clean-shaven man, gray-haired with an authoritative face and a very convincing manner. Mr. Mackinder liked him and asked him to dinner frequently, for though Mr. Mackinder knew that it was too late in life for him to take up any really serious study of science, he was quite glad to have such scientific facts as Dr. Perthwell might be disposed to let drop, duly prepared and seasoned to suit the appetite of the elderly. In this way, Mr. Mackinder learnt what was, roughly speaking, the velocity of light, and if he happened to require vitamin C, in what articles of diet he would do best to search for it. This was all very good for Mr. Mackinder, and kept him up in his belief that the world was an interesting place. Now it happened that Elsa Mackinder was invited to stay with her friend, to whom she had been long attached, Miss Jessie Polkinshaw, of the same age as herself, and destined for the nursing profession. On the night of her arrival, Mr. Mackinder, to square the table, invited Dr. Perthwell to join them at dinner, which he did. Dr. Perthwell got, perhaps, a little tired of preaching extreme moderation and temperance all day, and liked to relax a little in the evening. Mr. Mackinder's dinners were good. His cellar was good. There was no intolerable excess, but Mr. Mackinder and his guests generally, as it is sometimes said, did themselves fairly well. It was after the two ladies had retired to the drawing-room that Mr. Mackinder refilled Dr. Perthwell's glass with 96 and addressed himself to a subject which had been somewhat in his mind that day. "You know, Doctor, I was reading that murder case in the papers this morning. It puzzles me. Why do those poison people always bungle it? Why do they choose poison such as arsenic, which can be so easily traced?" Dr. Perthwell fixed his meditative eyes on the ceiling. "I should say it is principally from ignorance. No doctor, of course, would make such a blunder. But not even every doctor, not by a long way, knows what is actually possible." "And what is actually possible?" asked Mr. Mackinder eagerly. "Well," said Dr. Perthwell, "there are two drugs which can be procured at any chemist's without any formalities, and neither of them is in the least degree injurious. But If you mix, say, a quarter of a teaspoon of one with a quarter of a teaspoon of the other, and give that in a glass of water to any person, in less than an hour, that person will be dead, and no post-mortem, no examination of any kind, will ever find the slightest trace of poison in the body. Amazing, said Mr. Mackinder, perfectly amazing. That really is so.
It is.
I suppose I shouldn't ask it, said Mr. Mackinder, but could you tell me what the names of these two drugs are?
Undoubtedly I could, said the doctor, but
Mr. Mackinder refilled the doctor's glass.
After all, said Dr. Perthwell, you are a student of science. You are no ordinary layman. I have no doubt that your interest is quite legitimate. Would you be willing to swear to me on your word of honor that you have no intention of murdering anybody, and that if I give you these names, you will keep them strictly to yourself?
Certainly, said Mr. Mackinder. I am at peace with the world, and have no desire to injure anybody whatever, let alone murder them. Dr. Perthwell went to the door of the dining room, opened it, closed it again, and returned to his seat.
You will pardon me, Mr. Mackinder. I had to be quite certain that I could not be overheard.
He gave the names of the two drugs, and Mr. Mackinder wrote them down in his notebook. He put each name down on a different page, and the two pages were at some distance apart. Mr. Mackinder was cunning. On the following day, Mr. Mackinder purchased, without question, or suspicion being roused, 1 ounce of each of these drugs at 2 different chemists. He was surprised at the vast amount he got for 6 pence. He had enough to murder the entire neighborhood, if he had had any spite against it. He was a methodical man. He took 2 large sheets of white paper and cut them into small squares. Into each square, he put 1/4 teaspoon of the first drug and folded it into a neat packet. He then took 2 sheets of blue paper and did the same thing with the other drug, being perhaps inspired with a classical example of the Seidlitz powder. There was still some of each drug remaining, and this he destroyed in the fire. He placed the packets neatly in a cardboard cigarette box and put the box in a large desk, which in theory he always kept locked, and quite frequently did. He had now the means at hand to destroy 48 people. He positively tingled with power. If the worst came to the worst, and at present there was no worst, and it was not coming to anything, he felt that he could deal with it. And the years went on. It happened that once Elsa asked her father, "What are all those funny little papers in the cigarette box in your writing desk? I noticed them today when I went there to get stamps. By the way, you don't keep as many stamps as you used to."
"Well," said Mr. Mackinder, "as regards the papers in the box, I think I may tell you about them, because they are of extraordinary interest. But so far as I remember, I am to some extent restricted. You would have to promise me that you would tell nobody what I am going to tell you."
"Of course," said Elsa. Mr. Mackinder then told his daughter precisely what Dr. Perthwell had told him. And the years still went on, and Miss Jessie Palkinshaw became a fully qualified nurse, and went in for private work, and then came the letter from Robert Filminster. Mr. Mackinder knew Mr. Filminster, whose age was at this time verging on the 90s, quite well. He knew that Mr. Filminster had been a friend of his father's and had in fact financed him over various crises before the business came to a position of steady security. He had been assured by Mr. Filminster that the greater part of his property would go to Mr. Mackinder for life, and to his daughter after him. Mr. Filminster's letter was simply pathetic. He said that he knew he was on the verge of death. The end of the lease of his house was up, and he had been unable, even by a most extravagant offer, to obtain just 2 or 3 weeks' prolongation. He felt that he could not go into a hotel, for that would kill him painfully and at once. He knew that he asked much, but would Mr. Mackinder consent to put him up, together with his nurse, Jessie Palkinshaw, until the end came? Mr. Mackinder felt that he could do not otherwise than accept. His daughter Elsa agreed with him. She was also glad of this coincidence, which brought Jessie Palkinshaw back into her life. Questioned, Mr. Mackinder could say very little about Mr. Filminster. He remembered him as a very quiet and scholarly old gentleman. He reproached himself that they had not met more frequently in recent years. So Mr. Filminster was accepted and arrived in his own expensive car with his nurse by his side. He seemed somewhat wearied with the journey and glad to get to bed. Not till he was safely asleep did Jessie Palkinshaw descend to talk things over with the eager Elsa Mackinder. They both rejoiced at the renewal of their rapturous friendship. Miss Palkinshaw looked like a saint of wonderful serenity in her nurse's uniform. Elsa, with her shingled hair, felt worldly and common in comparison.
"Tell me now, darling," said Elsa, "what kind of a man is this Mr. Filminster?"
"I think," said Nurse Palkinshaw, "that you are likely to have trouble with him. It cannot be for long, however, because his own doctor assured me that he could not last for more than a week, and there was even some question whether he would not die in the car coming down here. But Mr. Filminster does not like doctors, and cannot be expected to do everything they say."
"But what kind of a man is he?"
"He's more than one kind of man. The first week I was with him, he was always very patient and nice and behaved himself. He can still do it if he wants to do it. He was all right when he arrived here today, for instance. Otherwise, he has become so eccentric and wild, no doubt owing to his disease, that sometimes it is very, very difficult to put up with him. Of course, a nurse who is any good must be prepared to put up with absolutely anything. I was sent to him by a doctor who is well disposed towards me and has plenty of work to give. I don't want to lose my market. Whatever Mr. Filminster does or does not do, I shall hang on and double lid screwed down. When he is in one of his bad moods, he uses the most terrific language you ever heard."
"Blasphemous?"
"That, of course. Only yesterday, in 3 words, he implied that my soul was lost, that I had the hemorrhagic diathesis, that I was of illegitimate birth. But that's not all, by a long way. He often uses language which is, well, physiological."
"But they have physiological language in books, don't they?"
"There are 2 kinds of physiological language. His is the other. I advise you to keep out of his way as much as possible."
"Oh, but I do want to help," said Elsa. "I don't want you to be worked to death. If you can put up with things, I must make up my mind to put up with them, too."
"Well," said the nurse, "he's not perhaps been quite so bad lately. He's had a good deal of pain, and that always keeps him quiet. I don't think he's actually broken a measuring glass for 3 days."
"I suppose the poor old man can't hold them properly. "That's not it. He throws them, you know. He throws pretty well everything. He says it's the only form of exercise that he's got now. We buy our measuring glasses by the dozen, and they don't last long. Every now and then he gets a fit of wonderful activity and would go out into the street if he were allowed to have any clothes in his rooms, but he isn't. Of course, I have to use a good deal of tact. As a matter of fact, I could pick the old chap up and carry him. But if he used any great effort, that might bring on the end suddenly. No, I shouldn't describe it as a soft case. Not easy by any means."
At dinner that night, Mr. Mackinder heard much of the story and was calmly philosophical.
"We must make up our minds to be patient," he said. "It is a question of a few days only. Surely we can put up with that. Tomorrow, Dr. Perthwell will be in to see him. No doubt he will be able to tell us something."
On the next morning at breakfast, Nurse looked a little worn. Mr. Mackinder asked kindly how her patient was getting on.
"If anything, he seems a little stronger. He had one of his fits of activity, but he's safely asleep again now. He started porridge sloshing again."
"Started what?" asked Mr. Mackinder.
"Porridge sloshing is what he calls it. He always will have porridge for breakfast, and the doctors say he is to have anything he likes. Some days he will eat it, and some days he won't. It's when he won't that he starts this porridge sloshing. He fills the spoon full with porridge, holds the end of the handle in one hand, and with the finger of the other, draws back the tip of the spoon, and suddenly lets go. He can send it quite a considerable distance that way. He generally aims at the different pictures in the room, but he's got me with it two or three times. It always seemed to amuse him. Of course, it makes a good deal of work clearing up afterwards."
"Naturally," said Mr. Mackinder, "I should hate to be unkind, but I think I must just ask Perthwell if he doesn't think the poor old chap had better be put into one of those institutions where the old chaps are put, you know."
But Dr. Perthwell gave no support to these hopes.
"My dear Mackinder," he said, "I could not possibly certify this Mr. Filminster. He is eccentric, no doubt, and his temperament is much altered by his illness, as any medical man would expect. But he has no delusions, and he is not dangerous to anybody. Even if he were, I should advise you to let him remain. So far as I can see, in 3 days he must be dead. You do not want to stuff him into an asylum just for those last 3 days of his life?"
"Certainly not," said Mr. Mackinder. "I had not realized that the end was so near.
3 days, I think you said?"
"I may be wrong, but from my observations today, I should think 3 days would be the limit."
But Dr. Filminster had no great belief in doctors. He lived on for another 2 months, and by that time the nerves of Mr. Mackinder, his daughter Elsa, and Nurse Palkinshaw were frazzled and pulped. Most of the work fell on them. The butler had already left, on the grounds that he had been engaged for a private house and not for bedlam, and Mr. Mackinder did not care to risk losing any other of the upper servants. He and his daughter and the nurse saw it through, relieving one another at intervals. All Dr. Perthwell could say was that he had never seen such a case before. He had never met with such extraordinary vitality. Any ordinary man must have been dead long before. Mr. Mackinder, his daughter, and the nurse used no hypocrisy. They longed for Mr. Filminster's death. As a concession to decency, they said it would be a blessed release for all concerned. After luncheon, Nurse Palkinshaw and Elsa Mackinder were taking 2 hours off duty for the preservation of their health and sanity. The nurse had had a fit of hysterics of brief duration, just before luncheon, Mr. Mackinder remained on duty. From his study, he could easily hear Mr. Filminster's bell if he struck it. However, Mr. Filminster was now asleep, and Mr. Mackinder hoped that, as usual, there would be nothing for him to do. Requiring a postcard, he opened his desk, and he left it open. And then he heard the whir of the bell on the table by Mr. Filminster's bedside. Almost immediately, it was repeated. Mr. Mackinder hurried upstairs. He had hardly got inside the door when a slipper, thrown with considerable force, struck him in the face, the heel of the slipper barking his nose.
"Why don't you pay attention?" said Mr. Filminster. "I want a whiskey and soda. The doctor said I could have anything I liked, didn't they? When you're on duty, you're jolly well on duty, and don't you forget it another time, or I might hop out of bed and twist your blessed nose."
The more salient and picturesque adjectives have been omitted, or substitutes have been provided.
"That is hardly the way to speak to me," said Mr. Mackinder, "and you've caused the bridge of my nose to bleed. However, I will bring you what you require."
Mr. Mackinder went downstairs with blue murder in his heart. He remembered the open desk and the cigarette box with the papers in it. Without hesitation, he took a glass and emptied into it a white powder and a blue powder. Into this he poured whiskey and subsequently soda water. Mr. Filminster took the contents of the glass in one draught, told Mr. Mackinder where he could go, and then flung the glass after him, but fortunately missed. In 2 minutes more, Mr. Filminster was asleep again. Downstairs, Mr. Mackinder wrestled with his agonized conscience, but as he summed up the question, he could not see that he had done much harm. There was not a day when Mr. Filminster did not beg them to give him something to put an end to it all. There was the best medical opinion that he could only live for a few hours now. The man was simply killing his daughter Elsa and Nurse Palkinshaw, and they were both absolute wrecks. On the whole, Mr. Mackinder decided that he had acted wisely. He then put a small strip of pink plaster across the bridge of his nose. He waited impatiently for the return of his daughter and the nurse about an hour later. In reply to their inquiries, he said that he had taken up a whiskey and soda to Mr. Filminster, and this was all there had been for him to do. He waited for them to go upstairs and to come down quickly, announcing that Filminster was dead. They did not come down quickly. When they appeared in the drawing room, Elsa rang for tea quite casually, and Nurse Palkinshaw said that Mr. Filminster seemed stronger, but was not in a good temper. Mr. Mackinder reflected. Those drugs had been in his desk for some time. Possibly they had now lost their efficacy. He was, in reality, not sorry to think so. On the following morning, as Mr. Mackinder sat at his early breakfast at 8 o'clock, Nurse Palkinshaw entered the room. "Mr. Filminster is dead," she said. "He seems to have passed away in his sleep. I have telephoned to Dr. Perthwell. But that is not all. I was tried beyond human endurance. I have a confession to make to you." She made it. "What am I to do?" she cried despairingly. "Nothing whatever at present," said Mr. Mackinder. "Leave things entirely in my hands. I will tell you more after the funeral." And then after the nurse had gone out, Elsa entered. She helped herself to a poached egg and a cup of China tea, and then burst into tears and said she must confess all. Her father heard the confession and gave his instructions. "At present," he said, "say nothing to anybody.
After the funeral, we must decide what is right and moral thing to do.
Dr. Perthwell had not the least hesitation in giving a certificate that the death was due to natural causes, and in due course the funeral took place. Afterwards, by appointment, Dr. Perthwell attended Mr. Mackinder at his house.
"I think," said Mr. Mackinder, "by your certificate you attribute poor Philminster's death to his illness?"
"Of course I did. It was the truth. Why not?"
"I have your promise of secrecy. I am speaking, so to say, under the seal of the professional."
"Yes, yes."
"Well, I may tell you that Philminster was murdered."
"Murdered?"
"Yes. What is more, he was murdered 3 times.
3 times?
"Yes, and not only that, he also committed suicide."
"I think you'd better give me the details of this extraordinary story."
Mr. Mackinder then narrated how he himself had murdered Philminster. He showed that his motives were the best possible, and said nothing about the abrasion on his nose.
"And then," Mr. Mackinder continued, "my daughter and the nurse came back. My daughter is absolutely devoted to Jessie Palkinshaw. She heard the language that Mr. Philminster was using to his nurse, and felt absolutely unable to endure it. And luckily my desk was still wide open on the study table. She emptied one of each of the powders into the tea which was being taken up to him."
"Go on," said Dr. Perthwell. "He was murdered 3 times, you say?"
"And also committed suicide. I think the nurse did what she did in a fit of temporary insanity, caused by the awful overstrain in the evening she took up to his room the cigarette box containing the poisons, and put the powders into his last whiskey and soda. I cannot understand it, but she left the box on the table by his bedside. There was also there a jug of water and a glass. In the morning she found that the glass had been used, and one of the white papers and one of the blue lay on the table. He had taken his own life."
"I don't think so," said Dr. Perthwell cheerily. "What's all this about? White and blue papers. Surely you remember that you once told me that there were 2 drugs. You gave me the name of them, which were innocuous in themselves, but would be fatal in 1 hour if mixed together."
"Well," said Dr. Perthwell, "you rather tempted me, you know. You did like to have a sensational story, didn't you? As a matter of fact, those drugs are both of them, singly or in conjunction, absolutely harmless. Had it been otherwise, you can't suppose that any conscientious medical man would have told you the facts."
"Why not?
You promised me absolute secrecy, you know."
"Yes," said Mr. Mackinder, "I think there was something said. As a matter of fact, I told nobody but my own daughter, and the supposed poisons were very frequently kept locked up."
"Then how did the nurse know about it?"
"Well, the nurse is one of my daughter's most intimate friends, and she promised Elsa that it shouldn't go any further."
The doctor yawned.
"I see," he said. "Well, I must be getting on. I shouldn't let it worry me. If I were you, I don't suppose that any one of the 3 was completely sane at the time."
That afternoon, I regret to say, Mr. Mackinder, his daughter, and the nurse went to the pictures. Join me next time for more dark and devious doings here on The Locked Room. In the meantime, beware of footsteps in the dark.